Welcome to Thinking Out Loud, the podcast that puts you inside conversations with the most deeply passionate, intensely dedicated, and yes, the most thoughtful people in our industry. So sit back and stay tuned. They may just change the way you think.
Hello, I'm Vicki Linz, President and CEO of CTAM, a marketing organization in the media entertainment technology industry. And today I'm speaking with Stephanie Fried, the Chief Marketing Officer at Fandom, which is the largest fan platform globally. So Stephanie, welcome. It's really fun to be talking to you today.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
You have a really interesting background. You come from a couple of different types of media, and you've done a lot of different types of functions. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself so our listeners understand your experience and perspective?
Yeah, of course. Sure. And, you know, I have certainly a variety of interests, but very interested in media where I've ended up. I have kind of taken a winding path to get there. I was a history major in college because I just love history and how people have kind of developed civilizations over the course of history across the world. And out of college, I actually started my own business. So an entrepreneurial stint where I was really chasing trends and starting to kind of get that spark of wanting to understand what makes people tick and what people love and how people are drawn to specific products and services based on what they're seeing in the world and how they want to be part of different types of communities. So I think that's where I started to get really interested in how people think and how you can actually create products and services to meet those needs. I went to business school where I dug into that, you know, more deeply. And I think that's where marketing research started to really appeal to me and marketing overall of how do we, you know, understand people, customers, buyers, fans, and make sure that we're developing things that are going to service those needs, excite and delight them. And that's really what I've taken through my career in media, you know, going across NBC and Vivo and Discovery and Condé Nast, bringing that kind of voice of customer, consumer, fan to those businesses to really understand why we should be moving our businesses in specific directions and making sure that we're always focused on meeting that consumer need. So that's been, you know, a thread through my career and why, you know, I love marketing is bringing those things to life and telling those stories to audiences.
That was a great overview of your interests, talents, and experience. You know, so many businesses today say they put the consumer first or they're consumer centric, but it is especially true for everything that Fandom does. So tell us about Fandom, about the business, about your portfolio of brands, so we all have an idea of the whole landscape view of your company.
Yeah, awesome. So Fandom is, what we say, the world's largest fan platform. But to get more specific, we have fans coming to us across their entire fan journey, across different parts of our business, in an aggregate, 350 million of them every month. And I always say to people, when I meet them and they say, oh, you know, what is Fandom? I say, you've definitely been at Fandom. Here are some examples of some of our wikis and some of the places you might have been. And they always say, oh, yes, and there all the time. Because we really are the main fan resource. We power people's fandoms is what we say. And we do that across the journey. So on our editorial brands, we own GameSpot, TV Guide, Metacritic. And that's really where at the beginning of your journey, when you want to figure out what to watch or what to play, you can really start there and see news, what's coming out, what's being released, what you might be interested in, and then deeper reviews and guides and then ratings on Metacritic to kind of validate, is this something that's going to appeal to me? Then we have Fanatical, which is a PC gaming business where you can actually purchase PC games. So we actually play even in the purchase or commerce decision point as well. And then Fandom, the platform, is a wiki platform, a community platform, where we have 250,000 plus communities that cover really every TV show, every movie, all content in anime, lots of books communities, huge in gaming with 150 million gamers visiting those communities every single month. And that's where you really deep dive into every single detail of every imagined world so that you can love those shows or play those games even better. And so it's really a true fan resource.
It's interesting the way you connect the dots across the consumer journey. It helps make your portfolio make sense. When you look at it at face value, it looks rather disparate. But when you think of it in the context of starting from what to watch through the consumer journey of the many different ways that they now touch, embrace, and engage with entertainment, it really starts to make sense.
Exactly. That's one of the challenges, obviously, of a portfolio company is, you know, how you bring the pieces together. Obviously, when we made the acquisitions of Fanatical and, you know, TV Guide, GameSpot, Comic Vine, those brands, we had in mind, you know, how we service the fan across their journey, right? So we have investment theses that we have as we examine and look for ways to continue to bring more kind of compelling brands and services into the portfolio or the fandom ecosystem so that we can connect the dots for fans. Because we do find, we do, you know, a lot of research. I love research. The space of fandom in entertainment, particularly in gaming, that there isn't a one-stop shop or a source. There's lots of different content creators providing articles and videos and recommendation engines and lists, right, around what's coming out, but there isn't a holistic place. All the way from discovery through purchase to engagement, enjoyment, and then back to discovery again to experience that. And so, you know, we're working to pull all of those pieces together to create a less complex solution for fans to so that they can spend more time enjoying the actual content or game.
Well, you mentioned research. I do want to get into that. But before we go in that direction, since we're talking about this portfolio, are there any missing pieces that you'd love to add to your portfolio? Or is there a next chapter that you're excited about moving towards to bolster that sort of entire spectrum of touch points with consumers?
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, certainly on the community side, so we have communities, we have some discussion on the platform, but we don't have, you know, deep like vertical social network. Now, a lot of people, you know, are going already or using Facebook or using Reddit for more of those discussions and more of that kind of opinion sharing. Some of that can be a little bit toxic, right? So one of the nice things about our platform is that it's about the facts. It's about the facts of the IP and it's about celebrating it. So it's not about saying, oh, you know, this show was horrible. What did they do? You know, why was this episode so bad? Why was this actress so horrible? None of that conversation takes place on our platform, which I actually really love because it's a much more positive place. And sometimes when you start to go into opinion conversation, you can very quickly end up in, you know, a more toxic space. However, I do think that connection and community is important too, to experience, you know, the fandom in a different way or deeper way. We do have a lot of like connections with Discord where a lot of the gaming communities, you know, talk to each other, but we aren't quite as heavy in that space. Not sure that we'll go into it, but that's definitely one place in terms of engagement that we haven't delved into as much. I think, you know, also on the recommendation side, we have the reviews, we have the ratings, we've developed some kind of more personalized recommendation engines based on our data as well. But we're not necessarily the source right now for what show should I watch tonight. We can help you find that show and where to watch it through TV Guide, but haven't as much gotten into the core utility space. And so I think those are the places where we have some room to grow and expand, which we're certainly looking at, either through things that we're building or things that we can acquire. And then certainly in terms of like the foundational elements of like how we do those things, how we connect the dots. So data as an example, and the data that we have on what people love in their fandoms and what people love in games. We don't have data though on, you know, game sales or viewership data. So there's other pieces of kind of the data ecosystem as well that could, you know, help us better connect the dots across the platforms.
Each one of those items actually holds a lot of value for consumers, but also fills a significant function in, you know, in the business ecosystem. So they strategically make a lot of sense, but I think they also touch on an area of particular relevance with consumers right now feeling overwhelmed by the amount of content and entertainment choices that are out there and trying to figure out how to begin to identify what's going to interest them or how to find what already interests them, how to keep up with what's next with what already interests them. It's messy and it's complicated. So do you find that consumers are coming to fandom for different reasons now than before, given what's going on in this entertainment ecosystem?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that as in particular, well, certainly where to watch things has become, it was a pain point, interestingly, when, you know, we started Hulu when I was at NBC, people didn't know what was going to be on Hulu versus what was on NBC. They didn't, you know, CBS wasn't part of it, but people didn't necessarily know that. We made a decision at the time when things were less complicated that if something was on CBS that we would actually still show a search result for it and send them over to CBS to make things easier. Things have gotten much, much worse because of all of the different streaming platforms now and the fact that shows move between streaming platforms very frequently as well. The one day Arrested Development can be somewhere and the next day it's somewhere else. So that's certainly confusing, and TV Guide helps with that. But I also think that the shows themselves, the series, the games have become much more complex and much more complicated. You know, we did some research recently into franchises, the power franchises, and this is something that obviously it's not an underlying trend that we just observed. It was something that obviously was key to the strategies of, you know, all of the studios thinking about, you know, Marvel or Star Wars as an example and how they've kind of both kind of broadened and extended their universes and worlds, which are actually called universes to begin with. But then they've also kind of gone into different media and form factors. So Star Wars into television shows, into animated series, into games, right? So that creates a ton of complexity for fans of that IP of what is happening, how are all of these different worlds and these universes connected to each other? What's new? What's for me? Why is this character showing up here? And fandom does a particularly good job of connecting the dots across all of those pieces and helping people understand. Sometimes even we actually have a maps product now, which actually shows kind of the connection between the different worlds and different points in time to understand the connection is really important, or you know, frankly, get like lost, right, in the world. And sometimes it gets overwhelming and maybe you pull back a little bit. So how can we help you with that map or that guide to those much more expansive, extensive worlds?
Fandom is a consumer business, but you have B2B relationships that help you drive it. And so, especially, you know, in the area that you were just talking about, I know that that your study topics are based on feedback you get from your clients, you know, streamers, studios, networks, gaming publishers, others. How closely are you working on the B2B side with these clients to help determine what direction to take content, how to give consumers more of what they want, and how to use your data to help inform their choices and decisions in that space?
Yeah, so very closely. And, you know, this is a passion point of mine, also from having been on the other side and trying to figure out what makes, you know, a show resonate with fans and what are kind of the components of success within one show, but also the connection of those shows back when teams used to do scheduling, putting shows together on specific nights to try to, you know, get different audiences to continue to tune in by stacking up certain tune-in periods. That doesn't exist in the same way. It obviously exists within cable in some ways today, but, you know, the streaming providers are using that data to make recommendations in real time using kind of the same type of analyses, right? And understanding and segmentation of their user bases. And at Fandom, we have a very, very, very deep understanding of what resonates with fans of a particular IP. So we understand every single character, what about those characters people are interested in, which characters are more popular than others, how that changes over time, what relationships appeal to people, what parts of the storyline resonate in gaming, you know, what weapons people are using and why, what are the most challenging levels to beat and what are they getting stuck on. So the amount of data that we have is honestly the reason I was excited to come to Fandom, because I was like, oh my gosh, imagine, you know, what this data, you know, would do in the hands of gaming studios, entertainment studios, to craft better content for fans and to figure out their strategies of what types of content they make, how they differentiate their specific services, and then how they market those services. So kind of all along the way. And we do work with many of our partners really closely, not just when it comes to the moment in time where the show is done or the game is done and they already have determined who their audience is and they've already determined, you know, what they want to focus on in their creative and their messaging. And now they're just looking at to us to get the word out, right? That's, I think, when we've failed, if we're just working with brands at that point in the process. Really, we want to be a partner to them throughout the entire process. Now, obviously, studios are large. When you look at like an NBC Universal, the team that's doing the media planning and working with their agency isn't necessarily connected to the development teams who are creating the content. But that certainly happens more and more these days, as it's so important to figure out in advance where your special kind of place or special sauce is as a subscription service, so that you can make sure that you can both, you know, acquire users, but also keep them. So it doesn't just seem like a sea of sameness. So I think there's a lot more dialogue between the people who are responsible for acquiring and maintaining those subscription audiences and the people who are creating the content than there used to be in the, you know, older model or world, which for us is also a good thing because it means that we're able to kind of help them along that whole journey. So what is their brand proposition? What genres can they really win in and own? What segments of those genres can they really win in and own? And how do they tell that story? And then how does that inform their content development? Like what shows they create, what games they license to create television shows, for example, what franchises they might want to continue to develop or expand or spin off, and then how to do that, right, with the data that we have about the appeal of different characters, the overlap between their different programs or their different games to help inform that. So you have so much data to help them, as well as then in licensing, in distribution. You know, if it's a studio that's creating a piece of content and hasn't decided if it's going to be on Apple or Netflix or Peacock, we can help them figure out where that audience is most likely to exist, right? Based on the overlap of their content with other content that's already part of that service. So you can put a lot of the pieces of the puzzle together depending on the needs of the studios. And we do work with them pretty deeply with, we call it Fan DNA Insights, which, you know, with our big partners, we do work for them kind of across that whole journey from development all the way to, you know, launch and marketing.
I think that's so interesting. And I also, from my perspective, what I see happening in the industry is that we're shifting from this mentality around tentpole content, franchise content that's going to attract subscribers and drive viewership and hopefully then lead to profitability and consistency in some sort of consumer relationship with the service, to a recognition that perhaps franchises are more about broader engagement and different touch points with consumers and less about tentpole content that attracts and retains that viewership. So when you think about using your research in a way that would inform franchise success and help the producers to explore different choices between expanding a franchise wider with a spinoff or deeper with a sequel or a prequel or whatever. And then also whether or not you introduce a game, whether or not there's any kind of retail interface touch point, whether or not there's licensing that can be done to help create more passion for fans or to feed the passion that is there with fans is really fascinating to me. I think the word content is becoming a much broader term now. And it sounds to me like you're moving in that direction with your business philosophy around your data and areas of expertise.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're completely right. It's interesting what you say about the definition of content, because I agree with you that it's really not just about content anymore. It used to be, it's funny, at NBCU, our president of research, Ellen Wurzel, used to say, you know, content is king. Content is king. We have the content, right? And that's true. You know, content is king, but it's interesting, like you saying that it's not just about the content now. It's about the experience. It's about the feeling. It's about the community. It's about the connection. It's about the other ways of engaging and interacting with those worlds outside of the content that really makes the content powerful. So it might still start with the content. It starts with the story, right? It starts with, you know, worlds and characters that resonate with fans at some, you know, deeper level where they want to be part of that. But it's about then also bringing that to life across all of those other channels. And that's what really creates the fan, right? Not just the viewer or the player. The fan happens and the connection of all of those other pieces, right? And that love and that feeling. And I always say, what I love about like fandom and people's connection to these fandoms is that it's part of their identity. You might love Crest toothpaste, right? And you always buy Crest toothpaste and you're loyal to Crest toothpaste. When you introduce yourself to someone, you don't say like, hi, I'm Stephanie. I, you know, have a son. I'm from Michigan and I love Crest toothpaste, right? But you do say, hi, I'm Stephanie. I'm from Michigan. You know, I have a son and I love Scrubs, right? I love the show Scrubs. It's a random one, but it's, and if you, you know, you could see me right now, I'm in front of a poster from Scrubs and all my other favorite fandoms, but it's part of like what identifies us, right? We are a Star Wars fan. We are a Star Trek fan. We are a Minecraft fan. Like, I think that's in the first three things my son would say about himself is he loves Minecraft. So these are things that it's not just like the content, right? Not that content is it like a superficial thing, but it's really about the world. It's about the experience. It's about the connection as part of your identity. And I think brands are doing a much better job of both understanding that and leaning into that and investing in that now, because they're seeing the opportunities that that creates from a business perspective.
That's an interesting point. You know, not too long ago, there was an announcement that Netflix is going to launch 2 retail physical Netflix houses locations in 2025. They describe them as a space where consumers can shop, play, interact, basically immersive experiences in their favorite shows. And that's sort of the perfect illustration of what you were just talking about, this new level of engagement with consumers where content drives different business models, different opportunities, and different ways for consumers to immerse themselves in the experiences.
Yes, I love that you brought that up. Experience has been kind of my obsession. Unfortunately, my obsession with experience really began in 2019 into 2020, where I was really excited about doing something big and experiences, and COVID happened. I do think having, and I feel like I'm also like the CMO for this company called Secret Cinema, where I went to just a really powerful Stranger Things, you know, 5-hour experience. I am afraid of Stranger Things. I'm afraid of most things. I really only watch comedies, but I caught up on the show on Cram It. We have a show on Fandom called Cram It, and I was able to like understand kind of the characters. The world that they created, and everyone dressed up as it was like around a high school reunion at the high school from Stranger Things. We all kind of dressed up in these different groups and we were having this reunion. And then the plot kind of took place within the experience. There were actors playing the roles of the characters, pulling you into different experiences in this huge, huge space that was to be the Starcourt Mall, which is where a lot of the action takes place in Stranger Things. And it was just so powerful. Like I really felt like I was in this world, in this series. I wasn't even a fan of the show. And I would say this was like one of the best nights of my life. I had so much fun in this experience and in this world that had been created to be entertainment, right? Initially, and content initially. All of a sudden, it becomes like a real life world and space where I can actually like interact with the characters. I found it so, so powerful. And I think since then, so many brands have done activations against different shows in real life to try to get people into, whether it's Bridgerton has done things with Netflix, Barbie had done things. Now I can't even think of, you know, a lot of the other ones that I've seen. I've been to those in particular, and some are more immersive than others, but they basically kind of take storylines and plots from the show or themed drinks and colors and worlds and kind of just vibrant spaces and enable you to celebrate that IP. And I love that idea. And I've wanted to be a bigger part of that. We do, for example, at San Diego Comic-Con, we do the opening night party. And we always do that in partnership with partners. So we worked with Paramount and EA this year to have some immersive elements within the experience within San Diego Comic-Con, where they can play games or experience different parts or sets from the show, which is great. But I do love the idea of a more like ongoing fan space. And I love that Netflix is going into that space. And I'm excited to see what they do with it and how they use it.
So let's flip this a little bit, because we've really talked about the next ring of the ripple effect here from deep engagement with content. How does a franchise intellectual property cultivate that really dedicated fan base that translates into increased viewership for television, increased film adaptations, you know, driving the core content business from all of this passion and engagement?
I think it's tough because it's a little bit of a balance. And I think, you know, I mentioned Star Wars and Marvel, and I think they're trying to figure this out too, which is how to expand the world in a way that delivers what the core fans are looking for, right? Those core fans who have been with that IP through their lives. Their parents love that IP. It's how they connect with their parents and their grandparents, like incredibly meaningful. So how do you make sure that it continues to resonate with them? But also, how do you find ways to expand the worlds and start to attract new audiences and new generations, right? So doing that and expanding that and growing the audience while not alienating the core is definitely, you know, a challenge where I see certain franchises kind of testing the boundaries of that and how they do that and how they do that sometimes in like Star Trek Lower Decks, like in different form factors. Did you go to like animated series? Do you specifically specify this is for the younger, you know, audience or the emerging Star Wars fans, right? Or the more sophisticated Star Wars fan? Like, how do you do that? But I think you can also do that with not just like form factor, whether it's a game versus an animated series or anime, you know, versus kind of traditional TV storytelling, but you can also do that whether you are between kind of sequels and prequels. That's kind of signaling, all right, we're staying within this world. And the goal is a deeper exploration of the world, deeper into why did this happen or what's going to happen next. Whereas a spinoff is a little bit different. It gives you more freedom. A spinoff can have new characters. It can delve into different and connecting worlds where you might connect with the one character or situation the spinoff is based on, but you're open to a lot more change because it's not affecting kind of the main through line of the original story. And so I think, you know, creators are playing around with all of those different pieces and how they can use them and how they can signal to audiences why they're creating content in these different areas, but that it still all fits together. And I think these are all of the decisions that, you know, we can also help with of who to, you know, focus that spinoff on or what scene or what vacation or what part of the world might be appropriate for a spinoff that's not going to alienate that core, but where we see a slightly different type of audience starting to emerge. So we can help with a lot of those decisions, but those are kind of the challenges and the balance that they have to consider.
Does your data and your research also lend itself to helping creators identify opportunities to work with brands and how best to put those pieces together?
Yeah, we work with brands in a couple of different ways, which I think is pretty unique just because of our platform. So number one, you know, we have obviously on our wikis, what happens just kind of technically, right, is a show comes out. And if it's a show that's not based on any pre-existing lore, so it's not a show that was developed out of a book, it's not a show that was developed out of a comic or that was a sequel or a spinoff to an existing franchise, there's no content that's already available about that show, right? So people start watching it. And if it's complex, I'll give you an example of like The Witcher, which actually came out of a game. But when the show launched, it was a complex storyline. And we worked with, in this case, it's Netflix, to get content from them in advance and make sure that the wiki was basically built so that all of that reference, as people watched that first show, they'd be able to find what they needed to on fandom to enjoy it more, to understand, like, why did this happen? I don't understand how this is connected to this. And it helped them connect the dots. So we have those official kind of wiki partnerships with studios, gaming studios and entertainment studios, where we work with them to get content. We provide them with insights on what's, you know, resonating, et cetera. And they have a connection with, and creator is a kind of an interesting word at fandom, but we have admins and editors who are the ones who actually create the wikis, who are the ones who love that IP and they include and continue to build every single fact or the canon of every show or game. A lot of the time, they are the foremost resource on Star Wars knowledge, as an example. And so through those official partnerships as well, they will connect with the developers of those programs provide insights and, you know, have a relationship there to help those studios kind of in the development side. But then we obviously work with a lot of brands, you know, on the sales side where we're working with them to help them reach those fans, right? Reach those fans in obviously the most powerful ways for their brands, depending on their goals. And that's where we have a larger partnership discussion about what they're trying to do and how they can best accomplish that by working with us across the fandom ecosystem. And sometimes that includes creators. Sometimes that includes our admins and editors in terms of showing up at, you know, a convention and kind of being part of the experience or the booth to tell stories to other fans and to help them market and promote. But sometimes, based on the stories we want to tell, it's other influencers that we're working with across different networks that we think are the best fit to tell those stories that the advertiser is, you know, looking to tell. And so we certainly, obviously, knowing a lot about fandom and understanding what influencers or creators are connected most closely to different aspects of those fandoms, can plug them in and bring them into the stories as we create compelling, you know, content and experiences for our brand partners.
So we've talked a little bit, actually quite a lot, about how you're applying the research, the depth of research and data and knowledge that you have. But I do want to outline for our listeners a bit more clarity around the form that your research takes. If I'm correct, you do 3 proprietary studies each year, and they're actually quite focused on different areas of the ecosystem. Is that correct?
We actually do a lot more than that. What we do do is, and I believe it's actually like 4 kind of what we call tentpole studies, and that's just in the US. We do others internationally. But in the US, we do 1 major study every year. And when I say study, just because I'm a researcher, it's both a study from, you know, a survey perspective where we're actually asking people about their attitudes and their interests, but it's also combining all of our data and our analytics and the billions of data points that we have into kind of a holistic story. We do 1 of those major projects every year that we call Inside Fandom. And that project is always based on a specific theme that we're really seeing kind of rise to the forefront in fandom. This year, it was about the power of franchises and franchise factor that we had a score basically based on the strength of different franchises. We also do every year other studies throughout the year where we focus on specific parts of our business. So we do, for example, inside streaming, we do inside gaming, inside experiences. So those are 3 that we typically do. Sometimes we'll change one of them out based on things that we're seeing or trends that we're noticing, but we tend to do 1 a quarter with then 1 big one in late Q3. And that is, you know, what we do in the US. But throughout the year, we do a lot of other studies based on, you know, what we're interested in exploring. So how people discover PC games, for example. We did a study this year on that. We did a study on Pride and how Pride plays a role in how people view entertainment and gaming and how they make choices. So we do, you know, other studies kind of along the way based on what's resonating, what we're seeing kind of happen and bubble up in our communities as well. And those are what we call kind of our thought leadership pieces. We do other pieces of work, obviously, for our own strategy, as well as for specific partners around specific IP that are much more comprehensive, but much more custom and proprietary.
The scope of knowledge that you are producing and also have access to is really remarkable. And, you know, I hope that people who are listening to our conversation today are starting to realize what an incredible resource and partner fandom really can be in terms of so many different important aspects of the content entertainment ecosystem. I'm glad you mentioned the word international, because I also want people to recognize what a global presence you have and how much global impact and engagement you're actually driving. Fandom.com is one of the top most visited websites in the world. And you just have this huge presence and footprint.
Yeah, we're actually in the top 25. You know, it's because you search for Luke Skywalker, you search for Logan Roy, you search for, you know, any, you know, character in entertainment or gaming, and fandom's going to be the first result there. And that's because we have more information, more detail on those imagined worlds than anyone else. And so obviously with the global appeal and connection to entertainment and gaming, I think in particular, you know, in the past 5 years, where certainly, you know, starting with COVID, but I think even now when things are hard in the real world, a lot of the time people want to escape into the imagined worlds and, you know, have been doing that more and more and more. And entertainment and gaming have just grown and grown and grown in terms of the time spent with people, with humans around the world. And so as they do dive in more, as the franchises become bigger and bigger, fandom plays an even bigger role in helping power those fandoms. And so sometimes we say we're a co-pilot, we power their fandoms. We're really there to help them love the shows and games they love even more. And so as that's grown, certainly we've grown as well in terms of the value that we can provide to fans around the world.
It's also really interesting to see boundaries disappearing and to see the blending of different cultural hits and international interest in content among consumers from all over the world. You know, streaming has really brought us a lot of international content into different markets, so people are exposed to more. Technology with translation and dubbing is making content more accessible across boundaries than ever before. Now you're talking about engagement and these fan communities, and those are becoming incredibly global and culturally diverse. And I think that's a really exciting trend, and it's really interesting to see these communities around passion points bring people together.
Yeah, we haven't talked about AI, so thank you, because I feel like I talk about it all the time, but I will say, because I do think there's a lot of really exciting use cases and applications. I think in terms of international, in terms of translation, and in terms of dubbing, I think that's a game changer when it comes to consuming global content. Because I think, and obviously like Squid Game, and there's been, you know, a lot of examples of shows, you know, even before the ability to really seamlessly like translate content, we're starting to come in just based on kind of global communities and the globalization, you know, that's happening everywhere. But one of the pain points was having to read, you know, subtitles, or else you didn't get to hear the real actor, you know, saying the word. So with dubbing, you've got a new actor and you're not experiencing it in the same way, right? With this, say, number one, you've got the translation, which hopefully is good. And number two, the acting is not, you know, the same as it was meant to be with the initial actors. And now with the technology where it's still the voice of the actor, it's the same intonation, it just changes the language and their lips actually move with the new language. Some of the things that are coming out is just incredible, right? And so basically it can still maintain the initial intent, the initial acting, kind of the cultural perspective, and all that changes is the language that's coming out of that person's lips that looks like it was originally that way. And I think that makes it much easier to consume and very seamless. And the amount of really incredible content that's coming out of so many different countries these days, I think it's just going to explode in terms of popularity, especially with the strikes. International content with the combination of AI, the strikes, the amount of new, really high quality content being created, I think we're going to see a huge acceleration of that over the next year.
And there's so many other positives that come out of this transformation that we're living through. You know, I just was exposed to a study earlier this week about diversity, equity, inclusion in content, and how it isn't just about a character being created, but also just the cultural nuance, the settings, the cultural references, the way that people interact, and their ability to embrace diversity of thought and all of the things that are less obvious than the character or story that's actually being written. And most of that was lost because of a lack of ability to translate internationally. And with all the things you just discussed now, it's possible to capture and enhance all of those things. So we're actually amplifying aspects of content that I think are really going to have a positive impact, not just on viewers, but hopefully on, you know, on the world as people become more able and willing to embrace the diverse body of content that's out there. I think that's all really very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. Like the ability to see things through different eyes, right? Through different cultures and through different people living in different circumstances. You know, in the US, we've definitely done a better job of telling stories from unrepresented groups and communities and people, but that, you know, doesn't even scratch the surface of how other countries approach different types of issues and problems, and being able to see that through like the lived experiences. Obviously, it's still actors and stories, I think will certainly change the way that people think and open people up to new perspectives, different ways of thinking. So, you know, I agree with you that I think that will be very beneficial.
So we could just keep going on and on and on. I think you sit in the center of so much of what's interesting and inspirational and important in the industry these days. But I'll just sort of wrap up with, you know, a question about what's next. What's new? What's next? What's most exciting to you? Where is fandom headed? And how do you see that playing out?
I would say maybe not as sexy, but also kind of sexy. You know, speaking of like AI, speaking of translation, you know, there's some things which, you know, for example, a lot of our wikis are in English language, right? And in the past, we've had to pay to get all of those translated, and it doesn't make sense, right? For certain languages where there's just not enough demand or interest to warrant translation. But with all of the Gen AI tools that are available now, we can do a lot of those things that we might not have been able to do before because of cost constraints, to really open up our content to global communities and not have to have them, you know, consume that content in English or in Spanish, which were, you know, the main languages. So I think that's a big opportunity just in terms of like globalizing what we do, in addition to, you know, helping fuel globalization of entertainment and gaming content in general. But I also do think, you know, I talked about experiences, and we're going to, you know, continue to explore and dig in there in terms of how we can help activate or accelerate existing, you know, fan experiences and conventions, but also how we can, you know, start to create our own meaningful, you know, moments for fans out in the world. And then how we bring those pieces together into kind of a connected ecosystem. You know, we obviously, as I talked about at the beginning, we have these brands that play different roles within the journey. But I think, you know, where the rubber meets the road, as I say, is how we bring those pieces together in a seamless way for fans so that it's easy for them, as opposed to living on different platforms. And so that's, you know, what we're working on now, as well as how we can really provide that key and core fan utility for fans across all of those different parts of their journey.
You know, at the beginning of our conversation, you shared with us that you were a history major and you were really interested in developing civilizations and how civilizations developed over time. And I think that that's just such a wonderful background and parallel analogy to all of the connections and communities that you're now building through the fandom landscape and the global ecosystem in which you operate. Thank you so much for sharing all of your, you know, insights and opinions on where we're headed and what's most valuable. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you today.
Thank you so much. Yes, it's very fun to think out loud. So I found this conversation amazing. And you had a lot of really interesting insights as well that I'm like thinking about and how, you know, those things come together around content as well. So I really enjoyed the conversation too. Thank you.
Hope you found this Thinking Out Loud conversation interesting and perhaps even thought-provoking. There are more on the way. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.